Yeah, say it again.
This is the book release party for The Last Hustle. Itself. I gotta tell you, I was privileged to read this book in manuscript, and it is funny, touching, poignant, terrorizing, beautifully written, and other superlatives that I can't think of right now. So when I heard that Kenny wanted to do this book release party here, I, of course, was delighted, privileged, and very happy to say yes!
Yes!
Yes, sir.
Say yes to yes.
Say yes to yes. And this book says yes.
Yes, it does. It does.
This book says yes.
It does say yes.
And that is a good enough reason in itself to buy it and a copy for a friend.
That's right. That's right.
And a DVD.
We have DVDs as well.
Yeah.
No Walls Remain. And
that's a good DVD. It's a good one. It's a good one. It's a winner.
This Light Won't Die. So, but.
I'm a partner now, y'all. I'm a hustler now. I'm really hustling. I can't help the book that's doing it.
Next to last hustle.
For now. That's right.
But I want to point out that we also are going to have refreshments. We have our own Gravenstein apple juice. We just pressed fresh 3 days ago from our own Gravenstein apples, organic, homegrown. We have Gravenstein apple cake.
Ooh, this is good.
We have tea. We have wonderful things to make it a party. But the real party is the life of the party.
That's right.
And here is...
Here's the life.
Here's the life right here, Mr. Kenny Johnson. Thank you so much for coming. Yay.
Oh, gosh. Okay. I'm going to dispense with meditation because we've all probably been in deep meditation already. I'm going to get right to what's going on with me. I want to say this to these two beautiful young ladies right here and this beautiful young lady back there. I am thrilled to have you here. I really am. It warms my heart because I've been talking about family, I've been talking about children, I've been talking about, and even in my book, somehow, at the last moment, I decided to put a certain picture in there, and it's pictures of when I was a little bitty boy.
Oh.
And if I could have someone such as your mother's and who are you, sir?
I'm her father.
Her father, who would have taken me to an event such as this, maybe my life wouldn't have to went through so much toil and turmoil and ups and downs, so you're really blessed, okay? I want to say you're blessed to have such a beautiful mother, friend, and father. You know, so this evening is dedicated to the young ones, to you.
Cool.
Yes. Can I have your names one more time so I can just burn it into my memory? Give me your name again. You. No. Yes, you.
Naya.
Naya, okay, Naya.
Sierra.
Sierra, oh, that's easy. Sierra's easy. Sierra and Naya and?
Lauren.
Lauren. Let me turn my hearing aid up here. Lauren, nice to have you here. Sierra, nice to see you. And Naya, nice to have you. I love your outfit, Naya. I love that. It reminds me of the Quakers. pure sweet. I like that. Old school, you know what I'm saying? Why I say old school? Because see, I got some old retro glasses. These are old school glasses, so you know I like. Oh God! So it's really good to have you here. I'm honored. And so I guess you know this show is rated G tonight. You know. Oh, man. Could we have the door open? Because I'm sweating. Or is it just
it's
me?
No, let's open the back door.
Yeah, the back door.
As well as, we can open both for a while. The noise can get a little.
No, we could get closed. Okay. Okay. But we do the. I just have to sweat. I just have to sweat then.
Yes. So you put your hand on the
Tulsi,
it might cool you down.
No, cool me down, Tulsi. Cool me down. I'm so excited. I really am.
Just can't hide
it. Huh?
Just can't hide it.
I can't hide it. This is beautiful.
Real quick.
No, so funny that you say that, Shama, because there is a practice, there is a discipline or a requirement, as you Buddhists know, that in certain traditions, you know, in order to be accepted into the monastery, you have to be able to go and lay in front of the monastery, no matter rain, sleet, just lay there until accepted in. You know, so this is the stuff I'm doing now. It's nuts, so I might as well lay here in the sweat because, you know, I realize that, you know, we can, as you say, you know, cool ourselves down. You know, we have the power to do all those things, to cool ourselves down and to heat ourselves up. I always say that once you have had the awakening experience, once you experience this oneness, then all powers, all things have been delivered unto you. You're capable of doing anything. I mean, this is the whole purpose of waking up, to be able to do anything, to achieve anything, to manifest anything, to bring anything in and out of being, to become gods and goddesses. This is the whole purpose of waking up. What's the waking up? Just say, well, I'm waking up. And not being able to have the powers, the cities, to do whatever it takes to control your life, to control your body heat, to bring things into being, to take things out of being, and to move through things. That's why we wake up. Because, as they say in the Bible, all things have been added unto you. Not one thing has been left out. All things. Now, whether we do that or not, use it or not, is another thing. That's up to you. But you have the power to do any and everything under the sun once you have the awakening experience. And what is the awakening experience? Being able to let the thoughts go. Just for a moment. To let the thoughts go and pop the curtain of eternity. I got that. Get up. But just letting the story go, you're able to peep into eternity and see no end. Then when you're peeping into eternity, you bring the curtain of consciousness back and you peep into eternity and you see no end. Then you see all glory, all power, all things. Anything is yours. Once I saw that in prison, I said, I'm cool now. I don't know how I'm going to take care of myself out there. I don't need to know how I'm going to take care of myself out there. But I'm going to be cool. You want to come up here?
Oh. Well, he was in jail. You know what jail is. Yeah, he was in jail.
Oh, I was incarcerated. I was in prison. Mm-hmm. I was behind bars for over 20 years. Is that okay? Can you handle that?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, Mom will explain to you.
If you want to sit closer to me and if you have questions, you can ask him.
Yeah, I was in jail. I was incarcerated. I was a juvenile delinquent. I made mistakes. And they handcuffed me and put me in a car and took me to jail. And I kept repeating that process. Until one day I was tired of being carted off and put in jail. And I got down on my knees. And I prayed to consciousness to send somebody to keep me out of prison. Because I was tired of being in jail. So, have you ever just got on your knees and made a prayer at night? Not? No, you don't do that.
Sierra, maybe not down on your knees, but...
But do you pray?
Talk to your soul and... kind of.
But I made a prayer to something greater than myself, to get me out of prison, out of jail. And it happened, because I'm here. So it was sort of like a miracle, magic. I was magically released from prison. So I'm no longer a bad person. I don't longer do bad things. This is different, huh?
Why don't you do bad things?
Huh?
Why don't you do bad things?
I don't do bad things now because I have what they call a conscience. In other words, feelings. I can't steal this woman's purse. I just can't. It doesn't feel right. You know, it goes against everything in my system, my mind now, to take from her. I'm not saying I don't do bad things. I don't make mistakes. I don't do things. But once I find out I keep bringing myself or creating pain and suffering for people, I try to eliminate that. I try to, how you say, see the error of my ways. And I go to consciousness again and ask consciousness to help me change the situation.
Or learn.
No, man. Yo, hey, man, shut the door, man. Lock the door. Lock the door, man. Lock this ruffian up in here. What's up, man? Good to see you, brother.
Good to see you.
Thank you, man. Wow. That's a stir in itself. The stir just walked in.
Who is it? We don't know it.
Okay, Peter, how you doing? Peter Van Dyke. We worked in San Quentin together, but before that, I was in a very bad marriage. I moved out here to California. I was in a place of love. I got married to this woman, and all of a sudden, all H-E-L-L broke loose. Mm-hmm. You know, and I became, it was a violent marriage. And so my teacher, Gangaji, told me, says, Kenny, get a divorce, but this time, go do anger management. Anger management led me to the feet of my anger management guru, Pete. And Pete taught me to sit in a room with a bunch of men and to hug myself. I'm serious. He says, bring up the anger. You ready to hit your girlfriend? What do you do? You're just up there. Now, what do you do? Now, give yourself relief. Hug yourself. I'm like, after about 6 weeks of doing the same thing, pretty soon, he said, you know, you're not hugging yourself. Okay, that's pretty good. Okay. Anyway, you know, because I had not learned how to really give myself relief, how to really love me, hug me. I always wanted you to hug me, or you to hug me. Somebody, the police to hug me with the handcuffs. You know what I mean? I want to hug. But give me handcuffs. Hug me with the handcuffs then. He said, hug. And so Pete taught me how to give myself relief, how to really deal with my anger, how not to strike out. Because when I met Pete, I was still striking out. You know, this is after the awakening and everything. I still had things I had to work through. You know, once you have the awakening, you open the curtain, you can see who you truly are. Now you got to go back and heal those different things that got you there in the first place.
Unfortunately.
But fortunately also. Depends on where you are at the moment you have, you know. Like, I say this morning, I was in a very shaky place. Someone had commented on me, had pointed toward my body. You know, they said, well, you got a belly. You know, your teeth don't look that good, you know. You know, I was getting this, I'm like, I'm ready to strike, but I can't, so I'm hugging myself, like Pete said. Giving myself relief, and I'm not finding any. Then finally, driving up here to Sebastopol, I said, oh, I got it. Like the light bulb went off. Like, you are not the body. I mean, here it is. And I got a belly. I ain't the body. I was attached to having a belly, so I need to get a six pack, you know. I need to go and get a whole new grill put in my mouth, you know. So I can make somebody else happy because they are attached to the body. See, his attachment, it can be mine if I take it on. Then I got to do the work around where he done jumped onto me. That sin done jumped onto me. Now I got to get the sin up off me. So I got to hug myself and give myself some relief until consciousness come along and give me an insight and wisdom and a let go. I can let go. So today, this evening, ladies and gentlemen, I am not the body. I don't know what's up here, but I'm not the body. I'm not attached to the body. And that is such a gift, to be able to not be attached to this thing. I had never had the experience of that, consciously, of the attachment to the physical body. But I had to have somebody point to this point, like, I don't like this, and this is this about you. And I said, oh, man, this don't feel too good. I mean, what am I going to do about this one? It's all, everything is a teaching. Everything is a teaching. Everything points back to oneness. Letting the story go. Everything. Every single solitary thing points back to letting the story go.
If
you hold on to it, you're going to suffer. You're going to suffer until you let the story go.
What are you drinking in that glass?
Americana. I forgot what I was drinking. Americana.
Yum. Mm-hmm. It's cream.
Coffee.
Cream.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yo, Americana heavy with cream. God, I want to say this. I always say this to all the audiences that come to me. I thank you all, because if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be no me. Just, if it wasn't for you, it wouldn't be me. Why is that? You're truth lovers. You went out searching, trying to find the truth. And then after you found the truth, then you want to share with us poor unfortunates that never was going to go to India, never was going to go to Wailing Wall, never was going to go to Mecca. So you all came to us. Y'all brought that teaching, that love, that freedom to us, to the incarcerated, to those in hospice, those in hospitals. It is you all who bringing it to those who cannot move to find this teaching. So I bow to you all. I thank you. It is you who made me possible. There's no me without you. That's a song. There's no me without you. I can't sing, but I'll try. And this is where we do a reading from the book, I think.
Yeah. The G part.
Yeah. Yeah, the G part. Oh, this is definitely G part. The Gong G part.
That's pretty G,
yeah, pretty G, baby. Okay, G G G G G G G G G G G G G G G. There it is, G. If you want, you can go outside and play.
What's going on? You're not stuck in the chair.
You really can move around. So now I'm going to say this, Sierra and Naya. Y'all can go wherever you want to go. Where y'all want to go?
Not really here.
Y'all happy here? You okay so far?
Kind of. Yeah.
Huh?
I don't really get what
you're talking about. Did you hear her? I don't really get what you're talking about.
Oh, my God. Ooh, this is deep. Well, it's going to take mother to translate. Mother's going to have to translate. That's a deep one.
There you go, you know.
Yeah. Wow, man. This is... You just have to... Okay, let's make this real simple. How do I look? Do I look happy?
Yeah.
Is happiness good enough for you? So that's all you need to get, that I'm happy. And the rest will take care of itself. You don't have to understand the words. Okay? Just understand that it's a happy man here. He's happy to see you all and happy to be alive. That's it. Okay? All right. Now back to PG, I guess. I don't know. Oh, man, what am I doing? Okay. It was September, in the summer of 1994. I was in federal prison in Littleton, Colorado. Governor G had already came in once and saw John Sherman, and he had had a shift, an awakening. And it was very clear that something had happened to him. And I wanted what he had. He was totally different. One day he was a revolutionary. The next day he was just a man that was in love with Ganguji. He was just in love with life. Nothing bothered him anymore. And I had been reading all these books by Muktananda, Yogananda, and all the other Nandas. And they all said, you need a guru, you need to wake up, you know, you need to have some type of teacher to guide you. And so my prayers had been manifested when I saw John Sherman and the way he was. I said, this is what I want, this. September 1994, I'm in prison. Ganguji's coming to a sock song like this. There's about 10 or 15 inmates at a church, at a chapel. And this is the setting. In September, Dayanand came in and counseled us. Come. You're right on time. Perfect timing. Here you go, right here. Right here. I got a save a seat for you, too. Got your name on it.
Thank you.
What's your name?
Lee.
Who?
Lee.
Please meet.
She's my friend.
Oh, Lee. Oh, okay. Well, you can sit over there if you want to get close to your friend.
Well, she can sit here too.
Her husband.
I've got a seat for her too.
Her husband. Oh, your husband.
Wow.
Seats everywhere.
You got seats everywhere.
You must be a celebrity.
I think I'm really happy right now.
Yeah, okay, so there you go. Okay, that's the one I reserved for you, Lee. Okay, we're going to start again. I'm about ready to read from my book about my meeting with my teacher, Ganguji, in federal prison. Yes. You know about Ganguji?
I do.
Okay, good. In September, Dayanand, one of the prison volunteers, came in and counseled us. Listen, guys, when Ganguji comes in, have your best question available. You've got to put together your very best question. Reading the Bible, looking through all my spiritual texts, I tried to formulate my best question. I prayed, I crossed my fingers, I felt that unless I found the best question, I wasn't going to get my best answer, the answer that would give me what John had. The day of the meeting finally arrived. Ganguji came into the big chapel room with her other volunteers, Susan, Shanti, and Dayanand. We gathered around sitting on a little meditation pillows in front of Ganguji, who sat in a chair. We went into meditation together, our eyes closed, sitting silently and letting our thoughts quiet down. Like now. Our thoughts are quieting now. And so let's just take a moment here and let's really just. I hadn't brought Ganaji a gift this time. The last one I brought, she had given to John Sherman. I wasn't too happy about that. Later, I found out that she usually gave her gifts away. She didn't take personal ownership. She just kept passing along the gift of giving. What happened was, I have been reading in the books, the Eastern text, that you need to take something to the guru. You know, you give them something, you know, and they give you something back. There was an exchange. So I took her a teepee, a little ceramic teepee, and I gave it to her that time. And she took the teepee, says, nice, sweet-looking teepee, Kenny. And I was suspecting something at that meeting. I was looking for something to happen at that meeting. The blessing I was looking for, John Sherman got. He woke up. And so I got kind of teed off of him because he got what I was supposed to get. And I did everything right. He did everything wrong. He got it. So that's why. Finally, Ganguji opened her eyes, turned, and looked directly at me. "I've been thinking about you, Kenny," she said. Her voice was so soft I had to strain to hear her. I had my question together. I was prepared. But for some reason, I didn't ask it. Instead, I blurted out, "Ganguji, it's my understanding that we have to die before we can receive God's grace. At least that's what the preachers tell us." In the African-American tradition where I came from, I was a Baptist, and Methodist, and Protestant, depending on what church my mother took us to. You know. And so all the preachers said, "Well, you know, you're a sinner. You're going to go somewhere and be judged by somebody that's waiting to judge you, and you might go to heaven, you might go to hell." So in my mind, I was already a sinner because of all the things, bad things I had done. So it was almost like a hopeless cause for me. So I was asking the question from the collective unconscious of the African American tradition. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they all think, "Well, you know, we all sinners. We are post sinners. We gonna someday and by and by we gonna go to heaven and we gonna get judged." And I knew I'd done a lot of bad things, so I'd probably go to heaven. Might go to heaven. Who knows? It's all up to some mysterious power that's hanging out there waiting to judge us. That was that's the mindset that we had from the teachings of the preachers in the church. It's changing today, but that's where it was then. So that's why I asked that question from that space. Because that was, "Oh, this is good now. We gotta start. I got to do a little preaching here." That was the last hustle. You follow what I'm saying? That was the last hustle in my mind. That was the one that would turn the lights on. Because that was stopping me from receiving this grace. That was like the last, that was it. That was like, "I'm no good. I'll never get into heaven." But that was a lie. And that was preventing me. And then she said, looking into my eyes, she said simply, "Kenny, God's grace is here now." God's grace is here now. And everything from then on became a blur. Her whole demeanor was so peaceful, her voice, her eyes, when she looked at me and said that whatever tension there was inside me, just let go. I relaxed completely. "You think that you are a black man, but you are not that. You think that you are the son of your mother, but you are not that. You think that you are a criminal, you are not that. You are none of these things. Here it is. You're not the body. You're not this black man. You're not a criminal. That's breaking the attachment to the body." I didn't understand it, but something inside me was coming, lights were coming on. Boom, 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 boom. I wasn't able to take in that last part because soon as she soon as she said, God's grace is here now, my mind had gone totally blank. She looked into my eyes, and I looked directly back into hers. It was like she sensed I wasn't getting something. Come here, Kenneth, she said softly, her eyes sparkling. Lean your head over here. And she gestured for me to come closer. She picked up this small mallet and tapped me 3 times right here in the crown of my head. Now, why would she do that? Again, I have been reading all these books from all the Nandas. And all the Nandas said you got to be tapped by the peacock feather in order to receive the darshan or the grace of the guru. So that was, again, in my subconscious. I had to have that ritual performed in order to receive the blessing of the guru. Because I had been reading it over and over. Muktananda said it over and again. Yogananda said it. They were from the old school gurus, teachers. Darshan, get up there, peacock. You're blessed, my son. You're blessed, my son, my child. And so she did that. And I... She tapped it on the crown of my head, my bald head, 3 times. Ding, ding, ding. It was the confirmation that I needed. I had this concept in my mind, and that in order to receive the guru's power, knowledge, and blessing, something definitive was supposed to happen. I had read stories about other gurus using some kind of symbolic action to transmit their wisdom to the student, like blessing them by touching the top of their head with a peacock feather. Later, I found out that this wasn't, in fact, true. A guru doesn't give you anything. A real guru, a true guru, simply mysteriously reveals inside of your own mind and heart that you already have and you already are everything you've already been looking for from a guru. In other words, the kingdom of God is inside of you. So nothing, she really gave me nothing. But it just, that had to happen. Because we are in these separate bodies. So we need to, a ritual needs to happen. Even though it doesn't need to happen, it needs to happen. If you understand that. Gangji must have sensed that I needed a ritual in order to receive what she was offering. She didn't do that with anyone else that day, and I have never seen her do it since. I'm going to stop here for a moment. Take a breath. And I'm just going to open the floor up for questions. You got any questions? You sure?
I have a question.
Yes.
When she helped you in your crush on her with mallet, did you get a physical sensation?
I totally relaxed. I didn't hear nothing else. It was just like the room. After that, I actually remember nothing else until I came up out of the meeting, and I looked into another woman's eyes, Susan Carabella's eyes, and I saw consciousness in her eyes, and I said, oh, my God. And then that was a confirmation that something had happened, because I said, are you like this all the time? She says, yes. You know, then we took, and we was outside. It was nightlife. It was darker than this because it was nighttime, dark. You know, we was in the prison courtyard and we stood up and I said, wow, look at those stars. Wow, they're beautiful. And you said, they sure are. and we fell up into the sky. And that was the first time that I had recognized beauty in a human being and beauty in nature. Up until then, I thought beauty was a Cadillac. I thought beauty was a 3-piece suit. I thought beauty was a beautiful face and eyes and lipstick, you know, dresses and clothes, stuff like that. Diamonds. I could not see beauty in another human being. Like I see it now. Thank you, darling. Did that answer your question?
Yes. Oh. Thank you.
Hey, how you doing? We got your chair weight on it. Got your name on it. What's your name? You're going to take the tag off. Take the tag off. This is really amazing to see so many beautiful people here tonight. It really is. It really is. I mean, you stop everything you were doing to come see me talk about you. How beautiful you are. How honored it is to have you here tonight. You could have done it's Friday night. You could have done anything. Remember Friday nights? When we was young? I mean, some of us. I couldn't wait for Friday night, huh? Put the cologne on and everything and go to the bars. I mean, now it's like Friday night. Well, it's another night.
And hustle, hustle, hustle.
Huh? And hustle, 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 yeah. Couldn't wait for Friday and Saturday night. Now, like Friday, Saturday, it's another night. So either I'm getting old or I've had a spiritual awakening.
Or both.
Or both. I think it's both.
And the night is young.
See, this is the PG part here. Soon as we shut these doors, we going over to Hot Mug Club. And that's when the party gonna kick off. This here have a little something in it. That's good. You got a jug for me, jug to go?
You know, I cheated and I got this book at Amazon, and I read it last week.
Okay.
I was really really happy with the book. And there was a voice I could hear every now and then. It would kind of wake me up all through it, you know, this voice in the book. But there was one little phrase that to me meant a lot. But you said that when you were in prison, you noticed that you were different from other people because you were interested in the intellectual material. And I know you talk about, like, the feelings being awakened and the feeling of love. But this being interested in ideas, I think is really important. And
right,
it leads to the other.
That's right, that's right.
And I found that, you know, that's probably there's something like that that's maybe the difference or why some people get it and others don't, or, you know, not that I'm trying to figure that out, but I thought it was really interesting that you put that little hint in there.
My aunt, you know, I talked to a friend about this not too long ago, but my, that voice, you know, all my life I tried to fit in to the hustling crowd. I tried to fit in because I had rebelled against society. You know, my mother, my father, and I rebelled against them because they had betrayed me, I felt. And so I kept trying to fit into the hustling crowds, and I would get so far, but it didn't feel right. And so what happened was I got to prison, and I started reading. I found myself reading a lot. But other guys would be out there gambling and stuff like that. I would find myself reading. That's reading. And I found myself reading heavy stuff and attracting to me heavy cats that will say, read this book, read this book. And the book would be about James Baldwin. You know, I mean, those dudes was heavy, you know. It's Ayn Rand and on and on. And so it kept progressing, you know, capitalism, socialism, you know. And it kept progressing, my reading. And I found that I love saxophone, so that gave me the musical, the lyrical, the rhythm of life. You know, was playing the saxophone, so I was able to just to stay in tune, just by playing a saxophone, being in a band, as opposed to go sitting at a domino table playing poker, gambling. You know, I mean, I knew how to do all those little card things and sleight of hand, deal seconds from the card, all, because I had time to practice those sleight of hand tricks. But I love reading more than anything about spiritual things. So that just kept me out of trouble, kept me safe. But soon as I got to the streets, I start picking up my gun, my knife, and still back, go back to hustling. Then I get back to prison, and I'll get back picking up the, I pick up where I left off. And so it kept progressing all through my life. As you see through the book, the reading kept progressing, and the reading kept getting more and more esoteric. Then finally, when it got to the Eastern philosophy, I said, I found home. This is it. Because why? They was talking about all the cities, all the powers. You could walk through walls. You could read minds. You could know things that will happen before they even happen. So that's very intriguing and exciting to a person that's incarcerated, that's in solitary confinement. Well, how can I walk through this wall? How can I read that guard's mind over there? What is he thinking? Oh, he gonna take my cigarettes from me. That's what he's thinking. You know, but I found that very intriguing. And I start reading more and more and more because they're talking about the cities and the powers and the ability to do this. I just loved it. And I said, once I got to the Eastern philosophy, I was done. Now it was just a matter of finding a guru. And so they told me this. And the Bhagavad Gita says this. If you repeat Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama, Rama. If you repeat that over and over and over, you will become free. I said, that's it. I believed it. I actually believed it, and that's all I repeat. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare. Over and over and over. Over and over and over. That's my mantra. And that led me to make a prayer, and that led me to yoga, that led me to, you know, doing hatha yoga and stuff. And then I had a dream that I was going to find, I was going to have a spiritual awakening while I was in prison. I had this dream of meeting Gangaji. Before I met her in 1980 something, while I was still doing a lot of time. In prison, all you have is your mind. That's it. They got the body. So you got to keep this thing strong. And so the Eastern philosophies kept my mind strong. So, because I was steady, you know, looking within, I was steady, you know, looking with. I wasn't concerned about the, you know, the physical place. I was concerned about inside myself. So it kept me strong, and I lived off dreams. I lived off dreams. Dreams were like nectar, manna from heaven. Dreams were manna from heaven for me, because again, you had your mind. You had your own little movie show at night, and you would go places. You would fly. You would run, and you were free at night. I couldn't wait to go to sleep. Because I'll be free. Even if I'm free, swimming, drowning, dying, I'm free. I'm out of prison. Because I wake up, whoo, boy, that was a wild dream. Okay. I'm ready for the next morning. Okay, what kind of dream I have the next day? But it was an adventure. All I had was my mind. I saw so many other men's mind go. I saw so many other people lose it. Even now, I just got a phone call from my daughter. My nephew, he's in Jeff City Prison, a prison that I was in Missouri. A guy I grew up with to hustle with, he's 67 years old in penitentiary, says, wow, Kenny Dale wrote a book, huh? He's 67 years old in the penitentiary still. He's still trying to hustle, 67 years old. What can a 60-year-old man do out here hustling? Especially his kind of hustle. Wow. But I'm just happy to be here. That's why I'm so happy to be here. The problems I got, the headaches I got, and the issues I got, they cool. Somebody said on Facebook, not a good book. I said, oh boy, okay, cool. I said, I wish I could get that chump in a penitentiary for about a week. See how good a book it'd be there. Ken, that's a good book, Kenny. Not a good book. I said, well, take it up. Okay, I ain't gonna go down there. That's a hot bunk conversation. Ooh, man. But I had so many. Go ahead.
I'm curious if you were experience has been able, have you touched other prisoners?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I have a prison program called This Sacred Space. Every Saturday morning, I have a volunteer, Richard. He goes in. Richard loves to doing his work. He goes in every Saturday. He has 17 to 18 men, and he works with them. And when he took over the program, Carl remember, when he took over the program, I was kind of scary. I was kind of leery of him taking the program over because he hadn't had an awakening. But over this last year, he just shifted. And he is so much softer. His life is better. Mm-hmm. His marriage fell apart. Everything fell apart while he was doing this work. Now it's all coming back together. And he is so much softer now. He is so much gentler. He's really the work changed him. You know, him going in every day. You know, what happens when you go and you work with people, you know, it's not just you affecting someone else. You both are affecting each other. And those men, they show up, they're 17, get that little sacred circle, and they do that sacred circle work, meditation and talk like this. And you keep coming and sitting talking about the truth, something's going to happen. I have one of my first guys, Carlos Eli, he's over in Berkeley, Oakland. He's been working for 6 years now. He's been out of prison 6 years. He came to my group one day. He says, Kenny, I got it. I got it. He got it. He got out, and he's been cool ever since. So I got to mail him a copy of the book because he will not stop long enough for us to meet and have a cup of coffee. You know. But he don't need to. I mean, he's out. He's cool. Like, I don't go see Gandhi and have a cup of tea with her every week. She come to town, I might get to see her, but I might not get to see her. That's not the issue. Gandhi is here. Carlos is here. So and you affect so many people you never ever know you affect. That's the beauty of the work that you're doing. You're affecting people, you don't know how many people you're affecting. So yes, just see. Check this out. I had the mission. The purpose of this book was just to have the transmission in here. You know what I mean by transmission? That somebody would be able to feel and taste and experience in the awakening process. So I gave the book to a young man to read. He had never really read anything. He finished the book up. He says, "Man, I'm different. I'm happy, man." And his life had been, He was like, wow, thank you. And I just saw him the other day. He lived in Sonoma with me. I sat down with him the other day. He is so cool. Now we're going to the next level. I said, okay, you've been in the honeymoon stage of bliss. Now it's time for you to start sharing this teaching with your friends. So now you need to start, you know, learning how to take them through the process. So they can experience this. They know something happened. Now it's time for you to do the work. And so, yes, this work that I'm doing, the book's doing, is changing people's lives. If one person's life is changed that's out there in the streets, that's stopping $4 million worth of stuff. I was a human wrecking machine. I was just creating disaster, the havoc everywhere I went. And it was costing money, insurance. You know, if you steal somebody's car, how would you feel? Somebody steal your car, now you got to go to insurance people, you know, you got to put a police report. That costs money. And I was doing it every day. Every day somebody was like, oh man, Kenny just came to town. You know, I drove up insurance rates, I drove up everything. Interest rates on banks, I was trying to break the bank, taking all their money, writing bad checks. I mean, investigators had to come, investigate the crime, you had to write it out. All that's money. So just by my waking up, I stopped all of that. Not paying taxes. I hate to pay taxes, but I'm paying taxes. I wish I knew somewhere I'd get around paying taxes, but I have to pay taxes, but I really don't want to pay taxes. You know, I mean, that's the thorn in my side, the taxes. You know, but I know I'm not, you know, I got to pull that one out too. That's another one. I'll get around to that one these days, pull that tax thing out, be happy doing paying taxes. But that's a bit, but I'm no longer creating just unlimited pain, unlimited habit. And that's why I wrote the book. If people catch this, young people catch this, and they change their lives, boom, we're changing society. This book is about change. This book is about transformation. Why? Because I did it. If I can do it, anybody can do it. And that's what I want the men and women in prison to realize. That's why I'm going to try my best to find somebody with a lot of money or not to write grants and say, okay, now we need to write a grant up or get money so we can take and get this book as many prisons as we possibly can. That's my next mission. The book's only been out 3 weeks. I'm talking, now how can we start getting the books in the prison? My grandson's in jail. He read the book. He says, Mama, aren't you proud of your dad? He wrote a book. I'm so proud of him. I'm done with this. I want to be like my grandson. He wrote a book. I know a lot of things I don't understand, but I don't care. He wrote it, did it. That's an inspiration to him. If Grandpa can do it, I can do it. Me and my daughter, we were just like, boom, boom, boom. Now she's just like, well, how can we get it in here? How can we get it in here? Now she's thinking, right, she's thinking this now. Up until then, because my daughter, they didn't really know what Awakening was all about until I wrote the book. And I gave the manuscript to my mama. She says, how did you survive all that stuff? What you doing standing here? You know, guys coming to your house with shotguns and say, we want your woman. Well, she ain't here right now. Come on in, let's have a cup of talk. Put the gun down. You know, stuff like that. This was every day I lived that. Every day I lived that type of life. So it's kind of boring being out here now. No excitement. Sometimes I had to create excitement. Drive 90 miles an hour.
No, you don't.
Drive 90 miles an hour. Man, well, I'm doing 100. Ooh, boy, back off now.
How do you deal with the boredom?
I go to meditation. I go to the ashram. I surround myself with truth-loving friends. You know? And that's how I deal with it. Because they keep one thing about truth lovers, they'll tell you what's wrong with you quick. They have a good, they're great projection machines. Hey. Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
We got one more chair. Yeah, there we go. Back. Got your chair. Right next to, what's your name?
Pat.
Well, okay, I'll win it back to back next to Rupa.
Kenny, do you really drive that
fast? Oh, sometimes when I'm going to LA and I got to get up 4 hours here, I drive about 100 miles an hour.
Like in the dark, when it's safe?
In the dark with my high beams on, yeah.
Not in the dark with your lights off.
Not with the lights off. I have a high beams on, you know. So they can see me coming, they get out the way, you know. You know, German style, you know, German Autobahn. Beep, 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 beep. You got an issue with that? I know you do. See what I'm telling you? See, I mean, well, these spiritual people, they keep you busy. Now I got to work around that.
I'm not spiritual, I'm your friend.
I know. Well, see, but that's even worse. See, your friends, what happened? They said, well, you ain't supposed to be driving that kind of that fast, can you? Okay, now I got to sit with that one, see how that lands inside of me and do the work around that one. So I'm never quite bored. Thanks to my friends. But the streets, see, the streets were so seductive. They were so seductive because people talk to you. They shared this. They shared themselves with you. You know, when I was coming up, no one talked to me. No one really gave me some information. No, really kicked it with me. The hustlers would sit down and say, listen, now this is how we're going to rob this bank. Now we're going to do so. You got your part, Kenny? Okay, let's explain to you again, Kenny. So. So we got instruction. We got talk. These people, they talk to each other. We communicated. I know it's kind of dysfunctional, but any kind of communication for me, somebody who was starving for communication, who had no father, had no big brother, it was like manna for heaven.
What seduces you now?
Huh?
What seduces you now?
What seduces me now? Oh boy, that's the Hot Monk Club conversation.
Okay, seriously.
What seduces me now, right now in my life, what is very seductive to me now is seeing how I can be best used as a spiritual teacher. That's what's most seductive to me now. How I can be best used the remaining years here on this planet. That's exciting. I was riding home today and I was saying, man, this is amazing. I mean, this is amazing for the come from where I come from. I remember driving down the streets trying to cash checks. Now I'm driving down the street trying to figure out how I can sell my book. I said, this is amazing. In one lifetime. So what is seductive to me right now is being able to be a $1 million seller, you know, traveling around the world, see people's lives change, talking to thousands and thousands of people. That's what's seductive to me right now. It's challenging to me. Yo, this is exciting. Because remember, at the first of my talk, I said, you can have it all, right? So I want it all. A woman read my palm in Asheville, North Carolina. She says, you got a long life ahead of you. You don't get sick when you're about 80 years old. I said, well, man, I got about 17, 18 years to have some fun then. So I got a 5-year plan to try to sell as many books, write as many books, talk to as many people as possible about this love, about this consciousness. That's what's seductive to me. That's what's exciting to me. Now, I need to ask you, what's seductive to you?
You ask me?
Yeah, you. You ask me, I can ask you. Say no, this is a two-way street here. Oh, okay, then. Well, that's the hot month.
No, I can answer. Want me to answer?
Yes, I
really
do.
Want me to answer?
Yes, I do.
Same thing.
In order for those two young ladies to be here, that is the truth.
Christian is
fruit.
But I
want to
be and I feel like I am sometimes.
Fruit. Yes, to be played by consciousness, yes. Yeah. Yes. It comes a point, once you have the awakening experience, you're bought with a price. You can only, you cannot not be used. Not want to be used. Mm. Everybody want. I mean, it's so funny. After everybody have awakening, everybody want to be a guru. Everybody want to do satsang.
Stupid.
And but you can do it in so many different ways. Like I talked to my friend today, Melissa, and I said we were at the farmer's market, and all of a sudden, I said, "You need to be doing what did I say you're supposed to be doing?
Working with kids.
Yoga for kids." She has a wealth of knowledge and she's already tried it. Waldorf, something like that. I said, that's your purpose right there. And you can share the teachings like that. You don't have to be sitting here in this chair. Wherever you are, you're in the chair. Ain't that right, Pete?
That's right. Yeah, I have a question.
Okay. Oh, ooh, boy. Okay.
And not a question, really. I just want to comment because the would you talk about the credibility? I don't know if anybody's been in the prison or anything, but the credibility this man has when he goes into a prison and the kind of charisma, but also the light that gives off actually attracts people and stuff. So what is it like to go in and then be able to go out? Because there are lots of times when you... And I remember doing that. So
it feels good, you know, to after have spent so many years in those places, and to walk in and know that you can come out, and to be able to walk in and you want to and you're sharing something with them that really means something, and they want to hear it. And they trust me more so than they would anybody else. Why? Because I've been there. And I came out alive, and I came back and I said, wow, now it's possible. Then I realized that I couldn't, I said, well, how can I clone myself? Then I was at an intensive with Ganguji, a fundraising intensive with Ganguji. She says, she put it out to the Sangha. Kenny want to do a book. I said, I do. And so what happened was, I went to the restroom, and the guy walked up to me, and we were both standing at our urinals. Hey, how you doing? He says, I'll write the first check for the book. Boom. Then the woman who was the co-author, she just got back from Mexico that 2 days later. And so I said, and I want you to do it. Because we had been talking about it, but she says, I need so much money and money. I said, well, God just wrote me a check, so here it is. Boom, 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 boom. So now, this is even much more credibility, because they said, wow. And I love the title, because that's going to yank them in some more. Hustle, ooh. Then realize, get to the end, like, oh, shoot. I got to be in love with myself. Hey, I was all right at page 125 in the bank robbery, but oh, wait a minute, man. He looked into Gandhi's eyes, and what do you mean by that? There's number love. I'm like, oh. And so they're going to have to do what I did. Start contemplating, meditating up on what Muktananda, Yogananda, and all the other Nanda said. And that's why we wrote it specific, so they give me, oh man, ooh, yeah, wait a minute. Yeah. Now they're too deep into it now. Y'all can't back out now, buddy. Keep on reading. And then they read about, wow, wait a minute, something happened. Can it happen for me? This cat's still alive. He might come to the penitentiary. So this is why this is written. So the other guys can catch Blackhawk. But I had to go back and do the prison work and everything to really see what was really needed. And I had to go back and do the prison work. I mean, I got out of penitentiary in 1997. And every other month, I would have dreams about prison. I mean, it's kept, and so I said, I'm not doing nothing wrong, so I'm like, what's going on here? Then I went to a retreat with Michael Mead, Maladoma, somebody, and Jack Canfield, and Michael Mead does a lot of dream work. So Michael Mead says, Kenny, something is trying to come through. Then somebody sent me an email. I went to go see Bo Lozoff up in Sacramento. Bo Lozoff says, man, I'm so glad you're here. I want you to go down to San Quentin and with me to see the man in San Quentin. We got me cleared and everything, ready to go in. I'm going into jail, y'all. I'm going to jail. I'm going to see my brothers, you know, yippee. And I couldn't find my car, so I couldn't get in. Then a week later, sir, I got my stuff cleared. I went in with Jock. What's his name?
Jock.
Verdun. And with our Insight Prison Project, I'm going to get them the props. They deserve it. And I start working with them. And next thing you know, I said, this is it. I quit having the dreams. The dreams just went. Because why? I hadn't done all my time. I was a bad person. So I hadn't done all my time. So I had to do it some kind of way. So every Monday through Friday, I was in a jailhouse, I was in a rehab center, I was in a women's jail, I was somewhere just doing my time. And I did that for 5 years, then one day I said, oh, I'm through with the prison work. The book came, now I'm probably going to start going back in. I was in Asheville, North Carolina, went to talk to some people, rehab center, so I might be doing a lot more stuff out here now. You know, whatever else. I just got an email from someone from Detroit, Michigan. She wants me to fly out there and talk to a lot of inner city youth who are going to be a part of a spiritual concert called A Chorus in Miracles. And it's jazz, you know, it's jazz, you know, saxophone and singers, but it's for, you know, so, and I'm going to be the MC. And I love walking around talking stuff, you know what I'm saying? So this is going to be perfect for me. So I get to talk around for 10 minutes, I get to walk around and tell people, 1,200 people, you know, inner city people, spiritual people. This is cool. And the 300 are going to be, you know, young kids that are on the edge and everything. Hope I got enough books to sell. I am a book peddler. Even though I'm peddling the truth, I'm still a peddler. But it's exciting now. It's all because of you all. You truth lovers. Who sacrifice your life for a wretch like me. Amazing grace. Mmm.
Would you say that, from one perspective, that prison is actually, because of the structure of the environment, a good place to practice in some ways?
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you got to read there.
Oh, yeah.
And play saxophone there.
It was designed, prison, by the Quakers, I think it was. They designed prison for a place to go and be penitent. That's why they called it penitentiary. They had all of them had their own little cell, and they had their own little Bible, and they went there to be penitent of the and reform themselves. That was the initial purpose of prison. Then it got changed into a business proposition. But still, the same intent is there. That's what I took advantage of. I went there and I became penitent and started reading material. It's like a monastery. And after I met Gandhi, it became a monastery to me. I saw suffering everywhere. It was a suffering everywhere once I had the awakening. I said, oh my God. I wish I had a magic wand. I could just wave it. It was so much suffering in prison. And once your eyes, the scales are removed, you're like, whoa. And then they see it. They see the light. They see the warmth. They see the heat. And they say, man, you know, how come you happy, man? And everybody's saying, what do you know that I don't know? Because they recognize something. Did I share with them a book or my spiritual experience or whatever? And they catch it. So it became paradise for me the last 2 years. There's a story here called Window Cat. It was so cold in a Boulder County jail, Greeley, Colorado County jail. So cold. It was so cold. I would wrap up in the blankets and the sheets, wrap my bald head up, and sit in the window and just look out at nature, at the horses, and at the clouds and the sky and the people coming in and out of jail, you know, and just sit all day long, all night. So the guard one time, he came, he knocked on the door. He says, you okay? I said, man, I've never been happy in my life. He said, I see you just sitting in the window. I said, man, I'm cool, man. I'm cool. He looked at me and realized I hadn't lost it. I knew what I was doing. He says, okay. And he shut the door. Because I'll be sitting in, you know, cats that sit in the window all day long. Now I understand the cat. They ain't really screwed up because they're sitting there watching nature. I mean, I didn't really want to be out there. I was cool just watching. I mean, I see cats that's looking all day long. There go old Sally again. She done walked down the street 10 times a day. Oh, okay, that's so-and-so. He just, where we go? Okay.
He started off saying you were cold, though, one time.
Who?
You.
Cold where?
I thought you said you were...
Yeah, I was cold. I was cold.
Cause
I
happy.
But I had to wrap all my... But it was so cold. And see, what they do in the jails, in county jails, this is cold. This is chilly. What they do, they turn the thing down about 50 degrees or something. So you're always cold in jail. Huh, Donnie? Yeah. They actually turn the air conditioning on in on the wintertime. So you're always cold. So I took the blankets and my sheet and I wrapped myself up and I sat in the window and I just walked, I sat there and I went into deep meditation. I just went to deep meditation. That's what cats and dogs do. They can't go nowhere, so they go to this deep state of meditation. And so the guard was concerned because I'm just doing this all day and all night. I'm not moving. He said, you all right? I said, man, I've never been happy in my life. Shut the door. Leave me alone. You ain't going to let me go home, so don't worry about me. I ain't stealing nothing. I ain't cussing nobody out. But I went to the other side. I went to deep meditation and contemplation.
There was one thing about jail prisons that I didn't understand or I'd never heard of, which was you say a couple times you can refuse the program not mix with the other people.
Yeah.
Can you still do that in prison?
Yeah. You always have one option. You can refuse to go along with the program.
Wow, see, I never have heard of that.
Once you refuse to go along with the program, guess what they're going to do? Lock you up.
Yeah.
Because you refuse the program. You're not going to child hall, you're not going to school, you know, you're not doing what everybody else is doing. we have, let's check this out, that we have all had an awakening. Guess what? We have refused the program.
Yeah.
We have refused the program. Now, I'm not going on with the system, so I refuse. So what you do? Lock me down. So we locked ourselves down in consciousness. So I said, I'm not doing it, let's lock me up. And they put me in solitary confinement. What happens is, you stay there until they decide to transfer to your better jail. See, it's all a hustle.
Yeah.
It was one of Donnie. It's all a hustle. They're trying to hustle you to do the program. Say, I'm like, no, I'm trying, if I'm a program, I want a program where they put Martha Stewart. Not Charles Manson.
I went on a tour of Alcatraz right. years ago, mm-hmm. and there they said they kept, they had really warm showers and kept it really warm mm-hmm. and getting really good, so they couldn't swim across the cold water of the
yeah,
bay.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. But you know what? This water, you can't swim in this bay. I mean, you can be cold, but I swam in it for an hour. I was shaking like a leaf when I come out. Yeah. You gone?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Let me say goodbye.
Thank you, Huffman.
Thank you. I'll see you again, right? Okay. No.
No.
No. No. Got to get a hug from you.
You got to give her one, Ken.
Yeah. Good to see you, okay? Thanks for coming. Okay. Okay. In my arms.
Hey, you're the
little talker. Yeah, I'll see you. You okay, darling?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's blonde
hair. Okay.
Thank you.
Now, who are buying books tonight? You got 30 of them, so. How many people buying books? How many have bought books already? Okay. Well, okay. So who are buying books tonight? So I need to do a stop and do a book signing for those who are buying books. 1, 2, 3. Mm-hmm. Maybe?
Yeah, I can think about my...
Okay, keep thinking. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Do I have to buy one? Can I just
kind
of
just
sworn out?
10.
Okay, cool.
Kenny, I'll just give him one.
Yeah, go ahead, give him one. Read it while you're sitting there, man.
I could sneak this back into San Quentin.
Yes, you can.
I got some guys going in there.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Gorgeous flowers.
Yeah, aren't they beautiful? I love them. What are these?
Dahlias.
Dahlias. I love that. I had a restaurant called Seafood Dahlia in Denver, Colorado.
Kenny, are you going on a book tour?
Yeah, I guess I am doing a book tour. I mean, I'm steady setting up one after another. I'm doing a... What am I doing? What am I doing? Huh? Yeah, okay. You go?
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks. Oh, man. Yeah. Thanks for coming, bro. Nice to see you. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks,
Hey, how you doing?
I thought we already did that. I'm doing good. How about you?
No, but you know, I was going, how's your...
He's not yet enlightened.
Are you working on it?
I'm resistant.
So, Mom, are you going to send him go to Amazon.
I am, but what I found out is you have to have like a bookseller send it to a prison.
All you got to do is buy it.
I could do one like on Amazon. I don't know if they do that here. Amazon could.
We do it all the time.
Okay, great. There you go.
What do you do?
To send a book to someone in prison.
Oh, okay. Okay.
To make sure it doesn't have any illegal substances in it, or razor blades, or hacksaws.
I wrote for him to read mine anyway.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing.
Because it's about transformation, about redemption. And it's very black and white, very clear.
Yeah. And the title definitely.
Yeah, we're hooking me in.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I have another question.
No, that's no problem.
I'm new to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm curious, was there a particular religion that you were drawn to? Was it Hinduism or Buddhism, or what was it that really drew you in?
It was Hinduism. I was raised a Christian. I practiced Christianity for as long as I could. Yes, I will take a little piece. Being a good guy that I am, I will take a piece. Then I went to Islam. I practiced Islam. Mm-hmm. And then I was bumped into Hinduism. And that was it. It was like the meditation, the yoga. You know, it was very clear what they were talking about. You know, Christianity, you got to be, you know, a decoder of symbolism. Mm-hmm. Islam was a lot more clear. But then when I started doing meditation and yoga, it became very clear. Like, oh, this is it. And then what he was talking about, the powers and stuff like that, so this is what I'm sticking with this. And then it said, you can become free by meeting a guru. I said, oh, I'm really staying with this. And all those things happen. You know, so right now, I don't practice, all religions are the same to me. They're all one. They all came from the same source. All the books, everything came from the same source. And so, I'm reading the Kabbalah right now, you know, I read fairy tales, consciousness is everywhere, the truth is everywhere,
yeah.
And so I follow whatever points me to consciousness, whatever it may be.
So you're multi-denomination.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, because once you have the experience of love, you see everything is okay. Everything is one. And even if it says not, that doesn't change your experience. And then you start seeing, reading the books, and you start seeing how the books are all pointing to this oneness. And so you become okay with all the religions. So I really am.
So you got your cities of walking through the walls, only you do it a different way now.
Oh yeah,
you get to walk again.
In the book, it's called astral projection. Mm-hmm. I understood what they meant because I laid in bed trying to learn how to project my astral body out, so I was able to walk through walls. In reality, I was able to project my body out and go to different cities and all. It's in the book. It's kind of a nice story. Mm-hmm. And I also walked through walls in 1974. It's in the book.
Right. I'll read it.
Yeah, I saw some bars.
Yeah.
I escaped.
But now you kind of walk in and you walk out again.
Too. Yeah, walk
out.
No.
It's good, right?
Same thing.
Right.
Walking through walls.
You get back out.
Yeah. But now I even walk through people's, you know, when you have an interaction with people, you walk through their walls. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I'm still walking through walls. And we can all walk through walls that people put up. As therapists, as...
And our own walls.
And what?
And our own walls.
Yeah, and your own walls. That's right. Mm-hmm. See, like this here, like no walls remain. Yeah, this is for sale for how much? $24.95. But today, it's going for $20. Oh man.
Can you get to a point where you could do remote viewing?
Explain that to me.
I'm not exactly sure what that means. I guess it means being able to project yourself.
Yeah, that's the astral projection I was talking about in the book.
So it's the same thing?
Same thing, yeah. You're laying here in your bed and you're able to project your real...
You're able to see
what's happening. And project it out and see what's going on. It's in the book.
Okay.
Yeah. That how to... My granddaughter, she says, Grandpa, you're going to teach me how to do astral projection. I said, sure will. Because it's really just being still and being quiet and waiting and watching. Pretty good cake. Thanks.
Very, very good.
Did you make it, Ann?
Handmade.
Oh, thank you, Ann.
Thank you.
And the apples are from the same source as the apple juice.
Mm. An apple tree on your property?
Yeah.
Very special.
Very nice. Thank
Man.
You.
Tree. Y'all don't let that apple tree get away with nothing, huh? Man. If there are no more questions, I can take questions. I would like to start doing a signing now.
Good.
So that we can close up on time.
All right.
So we can go ahead and take it on across the street.
Right. Well, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
No,
You know,
what's the cost of the book tonight?
Tonight? Who has the question?
It's on the back.